This is the Careering into Motherhood podcast, and I'm Jane Johnson, founder of Careering into Motherhood. Through our coaching programs, masterclasses, the community of 7,000 women over on our Facebook group, and this podcast, we aim for a world where motherhood and ambition can happily coexist. For more information about all the support we offer, including coaching programs and masterclasses, please see our website, www.careeringintomotherhood.com, or find us on Facebook. Just look for the group Careering into Motherhood. My guest today is Lou Featherstone, or Lou in Louland, to give her her Instagram title. She's a 49-year-old mid-menopausal British woman who tells it exactly like it is. And that was part of the attraction when I came across her on Instagram. She lives in a treehouse in Portland, Oregon, a complete nonconformist and a self-diagnosed shopaholic, a genuine clinical concern of hers. She's a middle-aged influencer, a style coach, a reckless optimist. And around 18 months ago, she posted a picture of her naked body on the internet, and it set her on a path of self-discovery. She, as a result, has found a new kind of confidence that she just didn't have before. And she's now using her Instagram or social media accounts to uplift and inspire other women. And despite being a really confident woman, she's also very open about her journey of self-discovery and says that she isn't quite there yet. She's passionate about encouraging others to step out of their comfort zone and stop aiming for this idea of perfection and just start appreciating the power and magic of pretty much everything life has to offer. It's a fun and wild ride. Let's get on and have a chat to Lou. Let's talk a little bit about your life. How did you end up You live in Portland.
I live in Portland in Oregon, which has been all over the news because we've been the epicenter of quite a lot of the uprising, which is very exciting. I'm very proud of Portland right now. But yeah, it's tricky times living in the States. It was quite a journey to get here. We moved here, actually last week was our anniversary. We've been here 6 years. And really? I cannot believe it's 6 years.
And when did you get there? We came
for my husband's job. So Portland is home to Nike's head office. And my husband for 17 years worked for their advertising agency.
He's a designer.
So he did 13 years in London, and then we came out here for an office transfer. It was very exciting. Our son was 10 at the time. I've got one kid who's Oscar, who I call the dude online, much to his delight, as you can imagine.
How old is he now?
16.
I've got a six-year-old. We call him the dude.
Oh, my God. He thinks he knows it all. He's quite right. He does know quite a lot.
But moving him out at, age 10?
10,
You know, that is
well, so, big. I mean, I'm a vicar's daughter. So
obviously, one look at your Instagram posts and you'd get that.
You could, yeah.
Not at all.
I like to live up to the reputation. I've dedicated my life to living every part of that job in the title, that job description. But I moved a lot as a child, which I always say has given me the best bits of me and the worst bits of me. So I know, obviously, it was disruptive and it was hard, but, you know, we lived an amazing life and we went to so many different churches and, you know, but every time God called, off we hoofed. And so I went to a lot of schools. So when I had Oscar, and I think in later I'd actually carried on doing that, and I've done that my whole life, just kept moving, kept moving. And I don't know any other way. But when I had Oscar, you know, I said to myself, well, one thing I want is for him just to know where he's from. So we were in Brighton. My husband's from the next town along. So we'd settled in Brighton. They were the days when you could get a house cheaper than London. But I threw myself into the community very much. I was chair of the PTA. I was on the governors. I was running a big family festival down in one of the parks there. You know, I threw myself into the community as much as I could. I worked for social services down there, working with families where I was a family support worker. So where children were about to be removed and taken into care, I'd go into the family home and do parenting skills and stuff with the family and try and keep them at home, which was an amazing job. So I really made, you know, we really embedded ourselves in the community there. Guy was continuing. My husband was traveling up and down to London. You know, he was on the train for a lot of Oscar's childhood. But, you know, that's how we lived. Right. Yeah. And he loved his job. But I think that Then when Oscar got to 10 and was really comfortable and happy in life, where I went, right, about what
anymore.
I said about you knowing where you were from, we're moving to another country. He was absolutely devastated. Oh my God, he was so mad.
And how long did it take him to settle?
You know what
did you do?
He was furious with us, I think. We ripped him out of everything he knew in this amazing life. And it felt dreadfully selfish because it wasn't that we had a bad life, you know. It just felt really greedy to be ripping him out of it all. And everyone kept saying to me, we'll see you in 2 years. You'll be back in 2 years.
Oh, really?
Why does everyone keep saying that? And then
why
when I
did
got
they
in,
say
I was
that?
Like,
because they thought you wouldn't hack it there, or
no? I think they just all hoped we'd come back,
right,
or that it was a flash in the pan.
Yeah,
and then we'd bring Oscar back for high school or something. Mm. And then I kept going, why does everybody keep saying that we're going forever? Yeah, but okay, we'll be back in 2 years. Whatever makes you feel better, I don't know. I think people just were going to miss us, and that felt better. But for me, I had to tell myself we were coming forever.
Mm.
And then when I got here and I started meeting people, particularly other Brits, because there's quite a large expat community here. Portland's very similar to Brighton. It gets compared quite a lot. A lot of people come here looking for a better quality of life, which you certainly get, I will say. But I realised that me saying we were going forever was probably actually just my way of making it worth it. Do you know what I mean? Like, convince myself it had to be worth it to go through all the pain of the goodbyes and leaving mum who'd been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. I mean, how selfish is that? And Dad's like, go, you have to go, you can't stay here. But that was incredibly difficult. But it was an amazing opportunity. And so we came. And we'd been out here to we brought Oscar out to have a look around Portland, and we had all thought it looked really good fun. So there was lots of it he was looking forward to.
Mm.
The Simpsons was written here, and Oscar went to the school where Matt Groening went to school.
Oh, really? Oh,
and actually, on the titles of the Simpsons, when he comes out of the front school doors and like Ollie's on his skateboard down the front steps of school, Oscar went to that school, and all the road names are named after characters from The Simpsons. He got them from all the road names, so it's really funny. So he thought that was quite cool, of course. 10. Anyway, we dropped him the first day of school, in we go, and we leave him sitting there looking like he's gonna wet his pants and kill us all in one foul swoop. So I spent the whole day crying and rocking backwards and forwards and drinking wine, and went to pick him up from school. He literally ran out of the door, threw his rucksack at me, went off to play football, and I've barely seen him since.
Really?
Oh, he has had the best time. But
brilliant.
Do you know what? The Americans, when you look at the Americans from a distance, or you bump into them on holiday, you're like, oh, you know, they're quite loud, you know. I don't know. They project a certain arrogance, I think, that it gets mistaken for. But then when you come to live here and you live amongst them, you realise what it is a confidence that they have. And they breed that in the children from school.
Mm.
So bringing a shy only child who wasn't the most secure. I mean, who is at 10? Who is at 49, to be fair? And dropping him in a really strange situation. And then, but then, you know, they make those kids public speak. They have to present every week in front of the class. They grow up public. It's something else, and it really watching him grow and change. And the best bit was, I thought 10 was too late, but actually 10 turned out to be a really good age,
really,
because he did very much have a sense of identity, and he still tries to hold on to his British accent. We make him say, I know the Queen, that I shall remain British. If you say that about 5 times, your British accent comes back. He slipped, and he's driving around. He's 16, he's passed his driving test, got a little job at Subway.
It's the all-American dream from the sounds of it.
It's all-American dream from the time of his bloody life, lucky bugger.
But it looks like you are as well. I mean, I don't know if you've always been really outdoorsy type of family, but certainly from your Instagram post, you know, you go off camping with the girls, you're yomping through forests and that kind of thing.
Coming here, it's been hard. It's been really hard. Being away from family is really tough, and particularly it's always felt okay because I'm like, no matter what happens, I can get where I need to be in 24 hours. But I haven't been able to. We had 18 months where the Trump got in, and the whole green card process ground to a halt. And so we got, and they had our passports and we weren't able to leave. So we had about 18 months of that. Yeah, we've got them now. We've got our green cards now. But it was such a fiasco getting them. But you always think, oh, I can get wherever I need to be. And then obviously with the pandemic and no one traveling or being too afraid to travel, or, you know, it's whether, you know, it's a huge decision. Do you get on a plane? Do you take your American germs over there? Do you bring your British ones back again? It's, you know, So that's really shaken me, not being able to know that I can just get back should I need to.
Yeah.
But also, when we first arrived here, I couldn't work. I came as a dependent on Guy, which I found incredible. Every form I have to fill in, I'm a dependent. And it just, every time I write it, it irritates me. But anyway, Guy went to work and was busy trying to establish himself in a new office and, you know, working hard. And I had nothing to do. So on when we first arrived, a bunch of friends who we already knew out here had done us this amazing hamper of Welcome to Portland. And there was all sorts of funny things in there. But one thing that was in there was a hiking book. It were 25 best hikes within 10 minutes of Portland or an hour of Portland. So I just started doing them and I put them on Facebook and I'd get messages from people I'd met in the playground or I'd met in the park or I'd met through other friends here and they'd say, can we come? Can we come? Can we come? And then gradually Hike Squad grew. Of women, and there's a gang, there's a hardcore gang of about 8 of us now. And we started hiking every week. We ditch the kids at school, meet at the coffee shop, grab a coffee, drive for an hour, walk up a mountain, take a bottle of wine to the top, have a lunch. Everybody, we do a potluck, so everybody brings something to share. I always bring wine, and then we stagger back down again and we'd be home to pick up the kids from school. So began a group therapy that has changed my life.
Really?
So yeah, these women, I mean, we've got a couple of Americans, token Americans, it seems only polite, and then there's Dutch, there's Belgium, there's British, and we're here mostly through our husband's work. We didn't go to school together. We don't have 40 years of friendship under our belt, but we are all here in this moment and we're really fortunate and we're all really grateful for it. And then we started doing big trips. Like one year we did a big backpacking trip up the Olympic Peninsula in Washington. We did rim to rim last year in the Grand Canyon. We climbed Mount St. Helens, which is a big volcano. We've climbed South Sisters, which is another. So we've just got all this on our doorstep and we're just really lucky. So
I was going to say, have you always been into sort of fitness? No. This comes on to the other big thing of yours, which is around body confidence, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I'm guessing these were all sort of linked somewhere.
All linked together. Yeah. I was not a really sporty child, but I was born with quite a sporty body.
Right.
And I never, what did I do? I mean, honestly, my main form of exercise was probably underage sex and taking too many drugs and dancing all night. That was mostly my exercise. I got to about 40. I've always been active, but just not really gone to the odd thing once or twice. But I've been 100 different weights and sizes through the years. Yeah. Oh, goodness. I've gone up from it. I mean, if you saw me when I was pregnant, you wouldn't even recognize me. Good grief.
Really?
I was absolutely I put on some weight while I was pregnant. Let's put it that way. Good Lord. My boobs were astounding. I should have made money out of that while I was pregnant. But pregnancy was not my happy place at all. But then when I was 40, I in quite a pivotal moment in my life, I was working for social services and I was going through another phase of shopping because I'm a shopaholic.
Yes,
Proper full-blown shopaholic. I tell this story quite a lot. I started a blog about it because it did really change my life, but in ways you don't think. So I woke up one morning and I bought myself a pair of £280 pair of shoes from Kurt Geiger. And I was working for social services and I just woke up in a cold sweat, not a hot one, but a cold one. What on earth am I doing? I have to make some changes to my life. I cannot keep going. I'm 40 years old. I cannot keep buying shit. What is going on? So I woke up the next morning, sat up in bed and just said, right, I'm not shopping for a year. And my husband
did
like,
you? So it was just literally that
literally
something switched
next
inside
morning.
You.
Yeah. And I went, I'm not doing it. And he went, yeah, okay. And so I set about, I started a blog the next day and I started writing about it. And just because I wanted to journal how it felt. And it was literally like going cold turkey. I was pretty much chewing the corner of the sofa for a few weeks. Yeah.
And but did you myself have any distraction techniques? Or I mean, is that how you got into fitness?
Fitness. My friend went, oh, I've joined this amazing fun fitness group and we're going to go for a 10K run in Madrid in 8 weeks.
Right.
I went, I'm coming.
Well, was that not just an excuse to buy a whole new wardrobe?
No, it was just an excuse to keep me busy, I think.
Yeah.
So I went, I'll do it. Yeah. I'm in. I want to come. I want to go on a girls' trip to Madrid. If I've got to go running, I'll have to go running. Damn it. Okay, fine. And so I downloaded an app called couch to 5K.
10K or something. Yeah, I've seen it.
And I literally started with that. And then I joined this fitness, this boot camp class at 6 o'clock in the morning on in a park in Brighton.
Right.
And that was a great thing I did. That was wicked. It was a bunch of mums and we just got up at six and we, whatever the weather, snow, rain, it was really fun.
Yeah.
And that gave me so much confidence. And then we started going and doing these runs in Madrid and all over the place. And then, I don't know, I wanted to get more ripped. So then I started to get really into fitness. And then I decided to join a bodybuilding gym. So I joined a bodybuilding gym.
Yeah.
And very quickly, my body changed. It was quite a small garage and there was sort of like he only had six people at a time, so you got sort of personal training when you went in. It was a wicked setup and it wasn't cheap, and he was a Serbian bodybuilder. Good grief, he was massive. So that was quite motivating. And then I really got into that and my body changed almost overnight, like really quickly. I started to put on muscle and I really liked it, and for the first time in my life I started to think, oh, this is what my body's supposed to look like,
really.
And the more I found lifting quite easy, and I found it a lot easier than running. So I went right off running because I could just stand there and lift weights. My body was changing, and my husband's going, yeah, no, don't really like that. And I was like, what? I love it. I feel really great. Yeah. He was like, no, don't like it. And then I remember we were waiting to move here. It was the summer before we moved here, and we went for lunch at my parents, and my brother was over from Dubai and my dad was really struggling with mum, and we were trying to encourage him to get more help in the house to help him cope with mum. So we were going to perform an intervention at this family lunch.
Oh my God.
So we're all halfway through the quiche, Lorraine, and everyone starts rustling about and I'm like, okay, here we go. The intervention's about to start.
Oh no.
And my role was to distract mum, I think. But instead, all of a sudden, my brother, his wife, my husband, my son, my parents, my sister, all turned to me and performed a bodybuilding intervention on me. Yeah.
Oh, and said, how did that go down?
Your body's really changing. We think you're on steroids. You're obsessed. Oh, no. We're really worried about you. And I'm sitting there thinking, you're all the people who love me the most. Mm. And I feel fantastic. And you're all telling me I look unattractive. All I could hear was, you look unattractive and awful. Was absolutely devastated. So then I sort of
what
crawled away.
Did you stop?
No, because
good on you.
No, because I'm me.
Exactly.
But then very soon afterwards, we moved here, and I was wandering around Portland, going, "What am I going to do? Like, do I want to? If my husband's telling me he doesn't find me attractive, but I find it attractive and it makes me really strong, where does that leave me? You know, he hates my fake nails, but I love them." So what do I do? Do I say to my husband, all right, husband, I won't do that because you don't like it. You know, it's nails. It's my body. I find it very difficult because I'm like, I don't know what to do as a good wife or as my being myself. So I thought, well, there's got to be a compromise. And I wandered into this big warehouse where they were doing CrossFit, which is we do lift weights, but there's a lot more to it, and it's very varied, so it's not as focused on building the muscle, more sort of an all-round fitness. And it's really mentally you have to be quite tough. I'm in there working out next to 18-year-olds doing exactly the same workout, but I modify it so I don't lift as much, or I don't do as many, or I, you know, I'm confident in there that I go in and I figure it out for myself. I know what pushes me. It gives me a determination, and if I don't work out, I am a grumpy bitch. So it's much better for everyone in my life that I make it to the gym in the morning.
You still have a phenomenal fashion wardrobe and fashion sense and everything. And I guess you sort of now, I don't know, are you in a place where at least your addiction, in inverted commas, to fitness is a very healthy one? Have you got your head and your arms around the kind of shopping side of things? Because you're also using that as a platform for reinventing yourself, your career, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So after the year of non-shopping, which I did, I bought two things. I immediately went crazy, of course, because people gave me vouchers and money. So I went straight back in and like, you know.
Well, after a year of no shopping, people gave you vouchers as a well done.
Yeah,
thing.
People gave me vouchers and money. I went, go shopping. And no. I went, okay, this is okay because I've had a year off. And then sort of simmered down the other side of it after that little frenzy. Then I simmered down.
Right.
And then I sort of started to reassess what had happened.
Mm.
And I had felt this strange feeling. And I was for ages trying to figure out what it was. And
right. It
was a feeling of confidence. And that's what it gave me more than getting the shopping under control.
Right.
I realized that if I could not shop for an entire year, I could do anything I wanted.
Yeah.
And it was such a revelation to me. And I was like, now I've just got to figure out what it is I actually want. Mm. And I never really... I don't know if I move ever really figured that out. I still don't know if I have until I've got here. And then I've gone, I don't know, I think I've gone through another quite big transformation coming here.
Mm.
And I have just, I feel like I've grown so much here.
Yeah, because that's also one thing I wanted to talk to you about. You about sort of your personal brand, because
mm-hmm.
I mean, we've just in about 20 minutes we've gone through, you know, mental illness, all these kind of things.
Sorry.
Maybe your family overseas. No, no, it's good. It's good. But it feels, at least from somebody who doesn't know you and watching from the big bad world of social media, like you seem really happy. You seem really confident. Your style seems to fit your life perfectly.
Uh-huh.
You know, do you feel like you've, of course we all have down days, but have you arrived?
Have I arrived? No, I really haven't.
No,
I really haven't. I am in a happy place.
Mm.
I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes, of course there always is,
of
in
course,
Instagram. I
yeah.
try to keep it as real as I possibly can.
Yeah.
But there's some things people really don't want to know. But I do live an incredibly fortunate life.
Mm.
But I have really woken up to myself. I have guilt with mum, and COVID's thrown a spanner in the works.
Yeah.
Marriage is not ace. All the time.
Yeah, it's hard.
And that's challenging. And the awful thing for my husband is it genuinely is me that's changed. Like, I am changing. I don't know. Oscar's got older.
Mm.
And I think I look at him now and I'm like, okay, I've done a good job. Well, he's 16, he's not going anywhere just yet. But like, I've done a good job. That's given me a confidence in myself. And also, he's gone. I never see the child. Life in America is very busy. School and sports.
Yeah.
Then now he can drive. I mean,
yeah,
I barely see him. And so then you're left sitting looking at your husband going, oh, okay, it's just us again then. All right. So I go, right, what do I do next? What do I want to do next?
So what is next for Lou and Luna?
Well, we are we've committed to staying in Portland for the next couple of years to see Oscar through high school, I think.
Mm.
I think those times are changing. I think, you know, I found a confidence in myself, and I think we might be happier in a busier city. I love Portland.
Mm.
It's not a fashion mecca at all. people come here for, you know, kayaking and climbing mountains. It's not really, you know, particularly. And I think
I'm just laughing because I'm imagining you walking down the street in some of your frankly utterly jaw-dropping outfits. And sometimes I do look at your Instagram posts and I'm like, God, if I had that confidence to wear some of the shit in my wardrobe.
You should just put it on and give it a try. Honestly, I love it. And I do. Your vision is probably exactly how it is. My friends like walking behind me and watching people watch me.
But I always say I shop for the life I live in my head. But I think actually I've been shopping for your life.
There you go. One thing that happened when I was doing the non-shopping was I didn't wear the same outfit at all for the whole year. I wore a different outfit every year, and I made Oscar take my picture. He was like eight, and he hated it. It was part of the morning routine. It was like breakfast, tea, school uniform, book bag, take mum's picture.
Oh.
And then when the year finished, he went, I'm so glad I don't have to take your picture anymore. And I had so many messages of people going, please don't stop doing the outfit of the day because we love it. And I was like, okay, Oscar, you're on again. I had to pay him for 6 months. But he's actually got very good at it over the years. But it's quite
amazing. So is he your photographer now when you do your...
No, I've got a friend who's in the hike squad called the Duchess. Her name's actually Yopi, but I call her the Duchess because she's Dutch and quite fancy.
I see what you've done there.
And the Duchess traipses about Portland with me, on, lying on the ground, hanging off buildings. She brings a stepladder sometimes, sending me inspiration, encouraging me, and just all round. She's like my chief cheerleader.
Sounds like we all need a Duchess.
Everybody needs a Duchess, I tell you. The shots would be shit without her. It'd be a disaster. Aww. But yeah, I don't know. What were we talking about?
I was saying what's next. And What's next?
So, 2 years ago, I belonged to a women's group, and each month they have a panel of experts or just mums. Mm. And there's a topic each month. And then there was one, and it was a woman called, whose nickname is the Vagina Whisperer. And her name's actually Tammy Kent, and she does a TED talk, and she's written books, and she's basically a vagina therapist.
Right.
And she believes that as women, we store all our power, all our trauma, everything is blocked in our vaginas. Okay. And so it's not what she does at all, but she basically fingers you for $1,000 and releases all your trauma. It's not as basic as that, but that is a large portion of what she actually does. She was on the panel. She was like the head of the panel for 1 week. My mate went, I really need a lift. And I was like, mate, I'm not sure I want, you know, this isn't for me. It's a bit woo-woo for me. I'm not going to the vagina.
I really
want to
know where this is heading.
It's amazing. So
it could
hold tight,
go anywhere.
So I pick her up. We go there. We're eating vegan pizza. I mean, even that's just a sentence. We're eating vegan pizza and everyone's meditating to their vaginas. And I'm sitting there with one eye open, looking around the room, thinking, I'm not doing it. Like, is someone filming this? We're going to get punked. And then I sort of caught myself and I thought, you tell everybody to make the most of every moment. Say yes to every opportunity. This woman does a TED talk. She's published books. Give it a minute. So fine. Closed my eyes. Mm. The last thing I remember is visualizing rooting my vagina into Mother Earth in the woods. I don't know what else she said, but I came out of there like a new woman.
Really?
And the next morning, I came out of the bedroom and Oscar and my husband were sitting at the breakfast bar and they said, what's up with you? And I went, well, I don't know. Me and my vagina are
you might want
very
to finish
powerful.
Your Weetabix.
Me and my vagina feeling very powerful and we could do anything. And it was the same feeling that I'd had after I'd given up shopping. It was a confidence in me and I was like, I just need to know what to do. Mm. And Oscar was watching a YouTube channel and I went, what are you watching? And he went, YouTube. And I went, what are you? And it was some nonsense. And I went, that's what I should do, set up a YouTube channel. And Oscar's like, oh my God, what would you even call it? And
every 14-year-old wants to hear their mother say.
I'm going to call it Middle-Aged Margaritas in the Menopause. He went, oh my God, no one will watch it. It'll be awful. Don't do it. And he left for school and I spent the whole morning looking at YouTube videos going, I could do this. I could do that. I'm setting up a YouTube channel. And so I called my mate in England who runs a Ice Storm, which is a vlogging academy. She trains women to vlog for their businesses. Okay. And we've been friends for many years and have worked on loads of stuff together in Brighton. So I gave her a quick text and I went, I want to set up a YouTube channel to annoy Oscar. What do I need to do? And she said, I've got a course, an online course starting on Monday. Why don't you do it? I'll send you the workbook. I'll see you on Monday.
Right.
So I said, all right then. Mm-hmm. So she sent me this workbook. And at the time I was doing pop-up British tea parties. I'd gone around all the charity shops and tea parties and I'd found a British cake maker and we were making quite a nice little, nice little time doing that.
Yeah.
And this workbook was tailored towards sort of your, you know, your brand and what are your goals and who are you attracting and, you know, basic brand sort of stuff.
Yes.
And I went, but I don't want to blog about tea parties. I want to blog about clothes and get free stuff. So I thought, well, why don't I invent a fashion business? Why don't I become a stylist? Bloody hell, God knows I, you know, enough people borrow my clothes and I help people out. Why don't I try and make a business out of it? So I started looking around at other stylists in Portland. I was like, bloody hell, I could do this. And I have always been sort of very conscious through, you know, so much outdoor life, I'm very conscious of the planet. And I was like, I could add a sustainability angle to it. And that would be quite exciting. And I had been speaking to a friend who works for Airbnb and they'd started doing Airbnb experiences. So I was like, oh, maybe I could train people to vintage shop. Because often when I'm in a vintage shop, I hear people going, oh, I don't even know where to start. Let's go.
I'm one of those
people. Yeah, because it's so overwhelming when you get in there. And I thought, oh, maybe I could add that as a package to the styling business. And instead, I went on the Airbnb website and there's a proposal on there for the experiences. So you propose what your experience would be. So I submitted a proposal And within 3 days, they'd called me. And within the week, I'd set up Lou and Luland's vintage shopping tours with a stylist. Really? And I was picking up Airbnb guests and taking them around all the local vintage shops and helping them find a new style for themselves. And it was so fun. I got the most craziest people from all over the world, many of whom I've remained friends with. You know, aww, I love the woman who came shopping. She wanted to buy vintage socks. I was like, I don't think there is a market in vintage socks because nobody wants them.
Smell your socks.
And the woman who only wears black and white, she went home with a yellow jumpsuit. Ooh, that was one of my finest moments. But we just have such fun going to the vintage shops and trying new things on.
So do you still, I mean, obviously now I guess people can't travel.
I've had to stop. But yeah, but from there, collection had started to grow quite a lot. See how I call it the collection now? I've changed it. The collection, it makes it sound like justifiable somehow in my shopaholic head. And everything's so flipping cheap. Like, you know, some of the dresses I've got were like $2-3. And then people would, there's a big thing with auctions here and they're always themed, so people are always wanting to borrow fancy dress items. I mean, it makes me laugh. I had so many messages from people going, can I borrow something for a fancy dress party? I'm like, these are my actual coaches, blasters. Like, I go to the supermarket in this and you think it's hilarious. So I suddenly, and then I had a visit back to England last summer. And I was blown away. In the year that I'd not visited, everyone, the sustainability was so inspiring. It was so exciting. And I came up with the idea.
But it's expensive still here, though.
It's so expensive. And it's not half as good. A lot of it, most of it's shipped in from here. It's just so vast here. So then, and particularly on the West Coast where I am, is ace. Like Seattle's got an amazing vintage scene, LA, obviously. And so I was so inspired when I came back, a couple of the rental places had started opening up the rental websites like Her and, you know, Rent the Runway obviously has been around a while. And I was like, you know, but they're all really boring. It's all, you know, Zara or whatever. And I was like, God, I could rent out my wardrobe. And I was like, well, why don't I rent out my wardrobe? Oh my God, I'm going to rent out my wardrobe. So I came back and spent a good 6 weeks photographing everything. I did it all myself. I bought a bunch of camera lights, got a remote control. I set up in the Duchess's spare room, set up a studio, lugged all the clothes over, set it all up, did it all, launched it on Instagram because I didn't have enough money for a website. So I launched it all on Instagram as a sort of test to see how it went. It was amazing in a way that I never imagined. So very quickly, it became apparent no one wanted to rent by mail order. Because it's vintage and the size is weird and it's just, you know, it's not something you want to rent for a month. You only want it for probably most of my things. You only want for a one-off event. And local people were like, can we just come round and try a few things on? And we had this random area downstairs in this house. We live in this ridiculous house. We rent it still, but we just struggle to leave it because it's so beautiful. And so I quickly pulled all the crap out of it, painted it and created the wardrobe. And then almost instantaneously, women started turning up at the house and coming and trying things on. So I get, they ring up, they're like, I'm going to an 80s party. I'm like, great. So I pull all the best 80s things out and then they come down and then they invariably end up trying on the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, sequin jackets, thigh length boots, having a drink. We turn the music on, they bring their mates, we take pictures. Brilliant. And it's just like, it's such a fun thing. It's so good. And it was going really well. And I, you know, I'd even dressed a bride. She was eloping with her husband to New York. So she went off with my gold sequin cowboy boots.
But you've got so many different avenues and things that you do. I mean, really, you're so resourceful. And
the hustle is real. The hustle is real.
The hustle is real. It really is.
But then the hustle came to a grinding halt with COVID, of course.
Yeah, of course.
So now I'm faced with the fact that there's going to be no major events, but probably at least until next summer, I would think. So that's kind of like, oh, damn.
People still might just come round to dress up and try on. I would if I lived around the corner.
I say that I've rented three things this week for photo shoots.
Have you? There you go.
So, you know, now I'm having to reassess what I do. And I did that. I know that's how you ended up starting to talk to me. You saw my stories when I did my ramble over not, you know, having to do my CV. It is hard, but I just need a regular income of my own. So, you know, I am forced, with all the things I've done over all the years, I am sort of at a point where I don't know what to do. But you you saw that story and you reached out to me. And then I had a career coach reach out to me.
Oh, really?
Who's a friend who works actually with senior management of a big company that's based here. And she said, do you want a free session? I've known this woman for a few years socially. You know, we bump into each other in the British pub and things like that. Mm. And I said, you know what? Yes, I'd love one. She literally rang me about 20 minutes later. And we did this amazing exercise. She's an energy coach. Mm. She opened my energy. Like, I just don't even know how she did it. It's a bit like the vagina therapy. It's just, you know, you open yourself up to something new.
That's
it. Just a part of you opens up. Mm. And I came off that call so elated. And I had to do an exercise to sort of identify what my superpowers are, basically. Mm. And I had to ask a bunch of people what I do well. And she said, you'll be surprised with the things that come back. And then make it. And so I did. And I emailed a few people, and it was quite strange. I find it quite hard to hear nice things about myself. I discovered I think it's a common thing with
women.
Sounds
awful to generalize about half the population, but it is true.
I find it, I just, you know, my husband's like, you don't hear what I say, and I'm like, I hear what I hear, and he's like, exactly, I don't know why I do it. And I find that hard when I'm battling with my confidence. It's really difficult, and it's quite difficult when you're struggling with your confidence, you know, trying to keep it real on Instagram, you know, because I try to encourage people to be confident. And then every now and again, you're like, just read your own post.
But you do. I mean, I'm not just saying it because you're my guest on the podcast. You know, I think you bring so much fun to so many people.
Well, I mean, I made a decision that I didn't want. I've watched so many fun Instagram accounts and motivation Instagram accounts get turned into sort of like just a long sales pitch, and people trying to flog a pair of earrings and flog a blooming. So I decided just to really, you know, I've had a few offers, you know, I was very excited. I had a big offer while I was with my dad. Actually, I got home, there was a great email offering me a influencer package that was quite good. And this is quite new. Once you turn 10,000, suddenly all sorts of funny things start happening. Once you get 10,000 followers. And I woke, and the first thing I did was look at the company and look at their response to what Black Lives Matter was, and that was a little bit disappointing. Mm. And then I woke up the next morning and I, you know, didn't feel quite right and made me feel a bit anxious. And then the very next day they were exposed on the radio while I was sitting having breakfast with my dad that they were running the sweatshops in Leicester. It's like, you know, so it's got to be the right thing I align myself with. You know, it fit with me. So vibrators. Yeah. So at the moment I've got vibrators, Hard On Coffee, just because it's called Hard On Coffee. And it's a local woman who set it up during COVID because she'd lost her job. So Hard On Coffee, woman owned business. Absolutely. And the Lou and Luland code is Wank Me Lou. So, I mean, how can I not say yes to that? Vibrator, would you like to test a clitoral stimulator? $180. I'm like, that better be good. Oh my God. I tell you what. I'm going to go live on a desert island with my clitoral stimulator. For some reason, I really struggle to say clitoris. I'm in love with that. And gin, Stillweather gin. And it's a local gin brand. And so I'm like, gin, coffee, vibrators. Mm. There is literally nothing else I want to really be working with.
Well, but anyway, you really are the true portfolio career, from clitoral stimulators to gin to wedding outfits. I love it.
The heady heights of something.
It's so fun speaking to you. And I'm really enjoying watching your journey. And as I say, I know it's Instagram. It's like looking at a pair of Louboutins through a shop window kind of thing. It's so much fun.
Well, it is real. It is real. It's pretty much all on there, from breakfast, lunch to dinner. But it's funny. People will follow me for different things, I think. So that's the thing. You know, lots of people say, came for the fashion, stay for the attitude.
Exactly.
Just before we started talking, I posted a picture of me finding a grey pubic hair. So you never know what you're going to get, to be fair, from one day to the next.
There you go.
I found two. It's horrific. I just had to share it. The Duchess said to me, surely you won't be posting that on Instagram. I'm like, this you're week not. I'm so like, fuck it, I'm keeping it real.
Brilliant. And on that note,
we've
still got any listeners. It's been really nice talking to you. I haven't laughed
Thank
so much this late
on
a Wednesday night for ages. Ooh, that was a fairly hefty episode. We actually spoke for about an hour on the call there. So my brilliant editor has got her work cut out there. But there was just so much to talk about. Obviously, Lou moved her family overseas at what she felt was a really difficult time for her son. So everything she went through there, then talking about body confidence and reinventing herself, finding who she really is and starting to build a sort of personal brand for herself and launching herself on Instagram in a really public way, but also in a way that she really obviously wants to help other women. My huge thanks to Lou for such an open and honest interview, especially where she talked about her shopping addiction. Please go and follow her on Instagram. She's Lou, L-U, in Lou Land, again, L-U. She's brilliant, a real fun account to follow, lots of entertainment there. And if you would like any more information about the support that we offer working mums or mums in general, just head over to our website, www.careeringintomotherhood.com. I will be back with another episode in a couple of weeks' time. Please like and share and tell people about Careering Into Motherhood. You can find us over on Facebook and, of course, this podcast. So I will speak to you again very soon.